Welcome to Radio Active's podcast. My name is Mimi Zacharias.
And my name is Layla Abe.
Radio Active is a program where youth come together and produce great radio at KUOW's radio in Seattle.
Today we're exploring things in our subconscious that we don't question and how they impact us as a society.
Do you ever think of questions that you can't figure out how to answer?
Yes, like those questions you've never really thought about, but then once you start thinking about it, you can't stop.
Yeah, like, why are stop signs octagon and why are fire trucks red?
And who has the answer to those questions?
Well, our reporter Brayden Swanson and I took to the streets to ask the population of Seattle to see what they think.
Why do you think stop signs are octagons?
That is such a good question. I think stop signs are octagons because it's big enough to see, but it, like, draws your attention to it, like that weird shape. Mm-hmm. Whereas a circle, you would see it, but you probably wouldn't register it. But an octagon kind of makes you think twice.
Is there a reason why stop signs are octagons? Yeah, I have no idea. It must be a reason. I don't know.
It's a good question. I have no idea. Yeah. They've always been that shape.
Why do you think fire trucks are red?
Because red is, like, supposed to be, like, a warning color.
It's a color that is easily recognized by the human eye, although that lime green they tried a few years ago is much more efficient.
Well, my first thought is that because fire, you know, is red sometimes.
Well, if you wanted to know the answer, the shape of a stop sign was chosen because the octagon was a unique shape that could be recognized from the front or the back.
Yeah, and fire trucks are red because red was the cheapest color back in the day.
It's interesting that no one really thought about these questions, even though we see these objects all the time.
Yeah, I think that we just accept and not think about simple questions like these, and we only start to think about them when people point them out.
That says a lot about us as a society, don't you think?
Yeah, and with everything going on right now in our country, I often wonder why people act the way they do when they're interacting with different types of people. Now I think we should hear from people who actually know more about this type of thing.
Great idea. Well, conveniently, my mom and her boyfriend are experts on implicit bias. I interviewed my mom, Yoshika Harden, and her boyfriend, Daryl Bryce, who has studied implicit bias for over a decade. My mom is currently vice president of student services at Seattle Central Community College, and Daryl is currently a professor of sociology at Highline Community College. Daryl explained to me what implicit bias is.
Implicit bias is sort of unconscious, you know, bias that people don't realize they have towards, you know, different groups of people.
I wonder what people's experiences with implicit bias are.
Well, Brayden and I were on the University of Washington campus to ask some students, and this is what they said.
Do you think your behavior changes based on the people you're surrounded by?
Yeah, absolutely. When it comes to, like, humor, I'm sensitive to what feels like might be acceptable and what might not be. So there are some groups that I would, you know, have no problem telling a brash kind of joke to, and other people that I would not do that with.
Do you think you've ever experienced implicit bias?
Yeah, I just spent a couple of weeks with a group of college students your age. And without even thinking about it, we sorted ourselves out by age.
I've experienced that a lot with just being a woman. But it gets complicated because I am a white woman.
Probably favorably, I guess, in some ways. I would call it white privilege. I think they give you a break on a lot of different things, and I think it's just part of our society.
It's hard to see it sometimes because we're so used to it.
Only now am I starting to question if my awkward experiences and encounters are based on my race. Like, I always had this notion when I was younger that, yeah, racism exists, but Seattle is a place where I would not experience it. But as I've grown up and heard about other people of color's experiences in Seattle with different types of racism, I wonder how much of my awkward experiences are based on my race.
That's interesting. I've been pretty aware for a while now about how people treat me based off of my race, mainly because of the work my mom does in race and implicit bias. She always made sure that I was ready to combat racism. And I've also been going to predominantly white institutions since middle school and have felt like an outsider because of it.
Yeah, I have similar experiences because I went to a predominantly white middle school and I attend a predominantly white high school right now, and I've just had experiences where teachers and students have questioned my abilities. For example, last year, I had a teacher who was reviewing my report card with me and highlighted a sentence and wrote, "Mimi won't understand." And seeing it, I was just offended because he assumed I couldn't understand a not that very difficult sentence, and I know he wouldn't have wrote that if I was white.
Yeah, I've had similar experiences. My teachers seem really surprised when I'm just as articulate as my white peers in class. My mom, Yoshiko Harden, has had similar experiences in her workplace.
Earlier in my career, my colleague and I were presenting to the Board of Trustees, and it's a big deal in your career. And so we were presenting on students of color and the work we were doing to support their success. At the end of this 10-minute talk with me and my colleague, she was also a Black woman, the chair of the board looked at us and said, "You're both so articulate." And he didn't have anything to say about the content of our presentation, about the data, about the work we were doing. His sole comment was that we were so articulate, which told us that coming into it, he did not expect us to be able to speak and present, right? And our response is really, well, of course we are. You should assume that we know how to come in and give a presentation.
That's crazy how he worded it as a compliment. Like, they should be grateful that he thought they were articulate.
The situation reminds me of other things that happened at school, too. Like, whenever I would try and combat racist or problematic incidents within my schools, I would always be seen as too aggressive or too angry. I just ended up changing the way I was as a whole.
Yeah, I feel that. I find myself doing that, too. And I think it's because I'm scared of acting like a stereotype in front of certain types of people.
My mom explained to me that it's this thing called code switching, which is a coping mechanism marginalized groups use to navigate spaces dominated by the majority. The example my mom used was about the way people talk, more specifically about African-American dialect.
So you just don't speak in a particular vernacular, so that folks don't assume that, say, you're unintelligent because you say we be instead of we are. And so that's code switching. And a lot of people, particular people from, you know, marginalized groups, it's a mechanism just to survive within organizations.
And something I noticed is that people code switch after noticing certain implicit biases. Like, for instance, when the teacher questioned whether or not I could understand that sentence on my report card, I started to make sure I only spoke proper English around him and never used slang.
I experienced the same thing. So the way I show up in class versus the way I show up around my friend are two completely different sides of me.
I think it's really important to start recognizing and acknowledging implicit bias as a problem so change can be made and people can feel comfortable acting like themselves.
I think that's a really important message, but implicit bias is also ingrained in our society. Actually, this reminds me of something Daryl said in his interview.
There's no way you're socialized in the United States and don't have, you know, biases, because we live in a, you know, sexist, racist, et cetera, society. So, you know, realize that you have these things and then try to do your, you know, research in terms of reading and, you know, talking to folks and, you know, learning, you know, on it. And the best thing you can do is start to, you know, check those, you know, problematic thoughts whenever you have them.
Yeah, I get what he's saying. Things I can do are make the implicit biases visible to people I'm interacting with so they know that they made me uncomfortable.
Exactly. And we know that, like I said before, implicit bias is ingrained in the way we are socialized in the United States, and that we are not alone in having it, and it's something that is preventable. We hope that this podcast helped you become more conscious of implicit bias in your daily life.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. You can find us at kuow.org/radioactive.
Say hi to us on Facebook at Radioactive Youth Media and Twitter at KUOW Radioactive.
If you haven't already, subscribe to the Radioactive podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast from, and leave us a nice review while you're there. It helps people find us.
Thanks to my mom and Daryl, our producer Salam, our reporter Brayden, our mentor Livy, and fellow Radioactivian.
And also thanks to our editor Jenny Asano. For Radioactive, this is Mimi Zacharias.
And this is Layla Abe.
Goodbye.